Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Okay, welcome back to another episode of...
Mostly Lit.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Mostly Lit.
Hey guys, welcome.
So basically today we're joined by a very special guest, and unfortunately we're not joined by Ray, but she'll probably turn up, I don't know, like the next 5 minutes or something.
Yeah.
But we have a very special guest with us today. Guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jamia Wilson, and I'm the author of Young, Gifted, and Black.
Welcome.
Welcome to London.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Mostly Lit.
Mostly Lit, yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? London is ancillary to this whole agenda. But okay, so how has everybody's week been? How's everybody doing? We're so happy to have you on, Jamia.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love it here, and the sun came out today.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I felt like this was such a good sign today that I got my first day of sun.
Oh my God.
But I just love it here. The energy and the beauty, the diversity. I've eaten really good food, met amazing writers, and met children who've really inspired me at art book events. And then the London Book Fair was very intense.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So London has given me so much in the short time I've been here so far.
Oh, my God. What's your favorite bit, Ben? What kind of food did you eat, actually? I want to know.
I want to know that as well.
Ooh, I ate amazing Tunisian-Moroccan fusion food, ooh, Adam's Cafe. I can't remember the neighborhood because I'm directionally challenged. Somebody else help me get there and help me find my way to the bus, I confess.
Oh my God.
My name is Jamia Wilson and I am directionally challenged. It was so delicious and just amazing. And, you know, I also found some really good gluten-free spots because I have food allergies. So I had people map my food options out before I got here. And so I've just been going around trying all the different gluten-free spots like Ethos, and I'll be going to gluten-free tea on Monday.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, like, gluten-free tea?
Yes.
So you're going to have like scones that don't really taste right?
Probably.
They're probably going to be, what is it called? What do they call it again? Boneless scones. You know, like boneless chicken.
See, my taste buds have shifted so much because even, you know, I had a pizza party for my staff and I said, oh, I have gluten-free vegan pizzas for everyone. And they were saying, yay. And then they tasted them and said, oh, this is actually good though. I think they were bracing themselves for some disappointment.
How does the food compare to like American food?
You know, I think people were freaking me out about my London food options before I came here. You know, New York people think a lot of our food. But I came here and I think that the food here is really good. And I've had really delicious food. And I think, I mean, mainly the food I've been eating has been a lot of like ethnic cuisine.
Good.
Because that's usually how I roll.
So that's how London rolls. How's your week been, Ray?
Oh, hi, guys.
Oh, hi.
She just appeared out of nowhere.
So lovely to meet you.
You too.
My week has been okay. A bit boring, to be honest. Nothing really exciting. So, yeah, I went to work and I came back and I've read a lot.
Oh, you've got some reading done this week.
Yeah.
Do you want to?
No, I mean, I'm like good. Like, congratulations.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. Yes, I got some reading done this week. Not like anything substantive, just like those little mini penguins.
Oh, right. See,
yeah. So, yeah, I've, that's what I've been reading. So, I've been good. How are you guys?
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. Good. It's been quite a quick week. Can't lie. Just been trying to speed on through.
The weather's turning, though, so I'm happy.
Yeah. Beautiful sun. Right. Beautiful sunshine. Beautiful sunshine.
Derek is trying to, like, maneuver everyone so that
they're facing. People, please speak into the mic.
No,
they're fine.
The mics are fine.
My week's been... it's been all right. I did something, but I can't remember what I did. I know I did something. Alex, did I tell you I did anything this week? I have a really bad memory.
I don't know. So let's move on.
Fair enough. Let's move on. I don't think I did anything then.
All right. So do you have a gem for us this week?
I do, actually, yeah. It is a poem. So it's by a poet called Princess Peace. And I basically saw her perform some poetry.
Yeah.
I went to an event, I think it was at, is it called LSE? London School of Economics.
Yeah,
LSE.
And she was there and she performed some poetry. And I was just like, wow, this girl, like, she's sick. So I went and found her on Twitter.
Of course she did. She's a stalker.
Anyway, so I went and found her on Twitter, and she just posted a poem that she'd written. I think she performed it. It's called Ode to Black Women. And it's amazing. It's really good. I like the tones. I like the way she writes poetry. The way she performs poetry is amazing as well, because she reminds me of kind of like a rapper in a sense, because she throws in like a lot of metaphors that you won't catch unless you're like, I guess, kind of like a hip hop generation sort of thing, or unless you're kind of nerdy, or
do you know what I mean?
Like, she's really clever, huh?
Did you come to do Azealia Banks in love rhymes, love rhymes and beats? Basically,
not like that. But I know what you mean though. Yeah. But she just, yeah, it's called Ode to Black Women. It's basically talks about a lot of the kind of forgotten Black women in Britain who have obviously added to community, added to society, added to Britain.
Right.
And, you know, she's obviously, like, she highlights them. She names a lot of them as well. It's not really a long poem. Well, not really. I say medium length.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's just great. Great rhythm, great tones, great content. Yeah, it's called Ode to Black Women by Princess Peace.
Princess Peace.
Yeah.
Oh, what a name.
Right?
What a name.
Okay.
Look at, why are you getting all excited? Ray's all in her feelings, like, oh, I feel good.
She's so relaxed. I do feel good.
She feels good. It's sunshine.
It's a lot, right? The weather's, like, really nice. Ray looks, I just relaxed, have a headache, today, which is annoying.
Oh,
okay. So if you see the way Ray walked in here, she stormed in here. I thought she was angry. She sat in front of the mic and she just starts grinning teeth. Like, happy.
she just came in a flurry.
I was late. I'm so sorry, guys.
All right. So this week, obviously, we've got Jumia here.
Welcome,
we're
going
to be talking
welcome,
to
welcome.
Her about all
thank
things
you.
To do with her book, writing, and just general. We had an amazing conversation before we came on air. So we want to try and rehash.
Yes.
Delve deep into that.
But wait, I want to ask what everybody's reading.
You done that?
Did you do that? I didn't say what I'm reading. Sorry, I want to show off a little bit.
All right, tell us what you're reading. What are you reading, Derek?
Oh, thanks, guys. So basically, I'm reading this very interesting.
Actually, so
book.
Annoying.
It's called The Kingdom by Emmanuel Carrère. I asked Alex how to pronounce his surname because I didn't want to butcher it, and Alex is East French, apparently.
I never said that was okay.
But you studied French, yeah?
It's fine.
You studied French, so
I'll take that.
But yes, really, really interesting. It was in the fiction section in Waterstones, but I'm reading it. It's like a memoir sort of thing. He's talking about his journey through, well, so far he's talking about his journey through Christianity, how he was like on fire for Christ at one point. And now years later, he looks back and he's just kind of like, what was going
on
in my life at that time?
Sounds familiar.
I think it sounds familiar to a lot of us. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just really, really interesting. I think as I get into it, he's going to start fictionalizing Paul's journey and obviously his conversion on the way to Damascus, I think it was. Saul. Then he converted to Paul, yeah. But it's amazing. And the writing is great. I think it's the clarity of the writing that I really like most, actually. Reminds me of Norsegaard, actually.
Oh, nice.
But yeah. So what are you reading, Alex?
I'm not this week. What about you, Jumia? What are you reading this week?
Yes, Jumia, what are you reading?
I have about 10 million things that I need to read after London Book Fair now.
Okay.
Because my day job is the director and publisher of the Feminist Press.
Oh, wow.
We are the longest running feminist publisher in the world. So there were a lot of different books that we met at the London Book Fair that we were thinking about wanting to acquire and that kind of thing. But I am reading a book that came out of last year's London Book Fair to us, which is called La Bastarda. And it's a novel by an Equatorial Ghanaian woman who is writing about a character who's an orphan, hence the name La Bastarda, and this character's sexuality and exploration of it. And the author is an out lesbian and also the first woman to have her book translated in English from Equatorial Guinea.
Okay.
So we're really excited, and I'm reading her book because she's coming to the States next week for PIN World Voices.
Right, right.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just really ready to welcome her and to learn from her.
Okay. Yeah. Great. What are you reading?
I told you, I'm reading my little mini penguins. They're
Which
not
ones,
exciting.
Though? Which ones you read?
I don't know.
You just pick up.
You know what? I've been having like a really. I think I've had a bad reading week. You know when you're just.
Man, just 5 minutes ago you said it's been good.
Reading no, week. It's been like I've just been reading, but
I've not been reading consistently.
Yeah, and I just pick up something and I just get really agitated and anxious, and I'll pick up something else, and then I'll get like halfway through.
It's an annoying phase.
It's
isn't
so
it?
Terrible.
Do you know what? I've just been tired. I think that's all I've been.
You're always tired.
I've just been tired. I've been like, you know when you just don't find it hard to get to sleep anymore. You basically, as soon as your head hits down, you're just gone.
That's a good life, bro.
No, but that's like, you know, usually I'm up doing stuff and trying to like get stuff done, but then I'm just like knocking out really early because my body just can't.
Yeah. Your body's telling you I'm exhausted.
My body's telling me I'm exhausted. Exactly. So that's why I've just not done anything. I've just literally either come home and just had a nap, laying down.
That's why you don't pick up my calls.
I don't.
You're like,
I don't, because I'm tired.
No, you can't turn into him.
Whenever Ray calls me, I pick up my phone, I just look at it, I kiss my teeth and put it back down.
I always worry when people call me and I miss it.
Well then, now I know.
I always worry when people call me because I'm just like, oh my God, is it an emergency? Because if it's not...
Me too.
Because then if it's an... Like, you know, like...
I've only called you twice for an emergency.
Yeah, yeah. But then
I really worry. Like, why is this person calling me? What's... Because nobody calls me. So when my phone rings, I jump
like,
a little bit.
And then I miss it. So then I miss it briefly and I'm like, oh God. Like, then if they don't call me again straight after, then it's obviously not pressing. But
anyway.
Sorry.
No, I identify the same way because... Now, even that I'm gone, I have someone in my office sitting there answering my voicemails, being ready to email me because I think it's a generational thing. That I'm like, oh, if you left me a voicemail, then it must be important.
It must be important. Yeah. Oh, exactly.
So somebody texts me about that voicemail because I don't want to be triggered when I come back and I find it.
No, I think it's my nan. I'll call her once and she won't pick up. Then I'll call her again and she'll pick up on that one. But then she'll call me the next day because she's seen the missed call. That I called her the first time. Then she'll leave a voicemail. I'm like, I spoke to you yesterday. Like, I actually spoke to you yesterday. Like, why are you worrying me? She's like, oh no, because I just missed your call. I'm like, I didn't call you today. Called you yesterday. Sorry.
All right, let's get talking about your amazing book.
Thank you.
That's come out.
Yeah,
I actually, this morning, I was looking for it. And because I gave it to my little one at home. And I found it underneath his bed. And I'm happy because that means he's actually reading it.
I love it.
The first, like, literally, I got it and I was like, okay, yeah, this is definitely going to him.
Definitely.
He's like really enjoying it. Although, obviously, he's just learning to read. I think he's good now.
How old is he?
He's like just turned 7.
Oh, okay.
So he's like good, but you know, there are things that he struggles with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I like to read it to him. And it's so weird when I read like the girls' sections. The first time I got it, I was like, "Hey, come here now! Come and read this with me." And he's really enjoyed it. I just wanted to ask, like, was it a frustration in you that made you go and write this, or what was sort of the inspiration and the passion behind it, and wanting to also have an illustrative aspect of it as well?
So the impetus for the book really came from the team at Quarto, my publishers, that they had been very visionary about having a nonfiction imprint for children.
Mm-hmm.
And they got connected with Andrea Pippins, who I have been in connection with over the internet and Black Twitter and all those things over the years, even though we actually have been in close proximity and close friend group with each other, we still haven't met, which is a whole other story.
Okay.
And so when they were talking about who could be people who could lead in a project that was about celebrating Black history and heroes, they reached out to her and she recommended me to be the author. Mm-hmm. And so they came to us with this amazing concept and said that we want to do a nonfiction imprint, and what do you think about this title? And what do you think about this book? And it came to me at a time when I was having frustration mm-hmm. about seeing young people in my life feeling like they couldn't find themselves represented in positive ways. And also frustration with what was going on in my country and how this was going to impact the next generation. Specifically, a young woman who is close to me, a girl, who was saying when the current president of the U.S. was elected that she felt like, oh, but I thought that Barack Obama was kind of the standard for who can be the president of the United States
See,
of
that's
America.
Incredible.
And so that was when the project came, I just thought, this is why we have to have this book, because I feel that the next 4 years specifically in my context, and then also things that are happening in England, other places in the world, that our children specifically need to know the lineage from which they came and to know about their power and potential. And then for children who aren't Black, who aren't necessarily learning in their schools our history, which is also their history,
mm-hmm.
because all of us originated in Africa, just for the people in the back who might not know that yet, that they need these stories too. And so when the project came along and they said, you know, who would be people that you would want to write about? I had a really long list, but was mostly excited to be invited to this particular party, as I like to look at it, and also to have the latitude. Cuerdo has been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Being in publishing myself, my staff and I really look to them as an amazing publisher. The ways in which they have supported us in this book
mm-hmm.
has really been great. And I've never been in a situation where I haven't felt like this is the truth that we want to put forth and we can't put it out. They've been open. And honestly, I think the thing that excited me most about having a UK publisher was that some of the content that we wanted to have in this book, I felt would be easier to publish in this context. Because there's an openness here about certain topics being covered that you might not find in a U.S. context.
Yeah.
So that was exciting too.
Interesting. So how did you kind of decide who was going in? So were you you had a massive long list. Then how did you come up with a short list? How did you decide?
So this is the part that's still controversial, because my dad last night was still giving me a whole thing about how did you not have Alexander Pushkin? And I said, oh, you've told me this 50 times already. Every time we talk about the book, he's like, did anyone call you on that glaring omission at any of the events yet? So I think it was really hard, because we did have a long list and we kind of had to prune that list. And it was really hard because there's only 52 that can be there, and the number 52 is great because you can have one per week that you're focusing on, especially when you're reading it to a child, like you mentioned. And so we really had to think about, how are we representing gender in an equity-based way? How are we representing Blackness in a way that isn't just focused on the United States? So we took the time to really think about how many people who are Black British are here, people from the Caribbean diaspora, African, people who are in Latin America. I really wanted to have someone who'd been to Antarctica, since we didn't have Black people who originated there. So we had Matthew Henson in the book. So we were really thinking about how to make sure with...
You were global.
That was global, that we had LGBTQ people, that we had people with disabilities was important to me, because I was born blind in one of my eyes. People who struggled through childhood illness, you know, just all these different things so that children could see themselves in the profiles was really important to us. And, you know, we tried to do it as thoughtfully as we could. And I know there's some people feel really strongly about that weren't in there. Michael Jackson has some very powerful fans out in the world. But we really tried to figure out ways in which we could make the book as inclusive as possible.
Yeah, so do you think there's going to be like a volume two, or do you think that's, would that be something that you'd be interested in doing then?
I would love to
appease the people that are coming at you.
I would love to do that.
because the social media is not friendly.
I think, you know, I know Andrea and I are going to be working on something else. Really exciting with Quarto coming up. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't want to speak for anyone else, but I know that Jamia Wilson is excited about the possibility of doing another volume. You know, there were just so many people that were not in it. And, you know, we were talking about Black Panther earlier a little bit, because how could we have a conversation with so many amazing, beautiful Black folks together and not talk about Black Panther? But I was thinking about, in this panel I was on at Foils the other day with other Black writers, ancestors, and I had said, you know, and the ancestral plane was speaking to me. So a lot of the people who were in it were actually people who were kind of like, oh,
yeah,
you have to be whispering in my ear that my story needs to be told. Mm-hmm. And I've heard from other people that that's a similar process that they've gone through.
Yeah.
I just quite liked the fact that the people in the book were both historical and modern. A lot of the times when you get these types of books that look at role models, they focus on like old people that you probably have absolute no immediate connection to. And so when I opened it and I saw an old person, I was like, okay, yeah, sure. And then I saw someone modern, and I was like, oh wow, okay, this is amazing. I think it also enables white people have role models that are current, that are around them. And I think a lot of Black kids lack role models that, well, they're not shown role models around them that are living in a positive light. And I just remembered how in school, the only Black person that I was taught did this amazing thing was like Mary Seacole when I was like in year eight.
Yeah.
Like otherwise,
good old Mary.
I don't remember in my childhood. Yeah, it's like, you know, when they talked about history, they'd be like, oh yeah, and there was this woman called Mary Seacole.
Because they would always parry her against Florence Nightingale.
Yeah.
And it was like, there was this documentary. Do you remember watching this documentary of Florence Nightingale and Mary Seacole? And it's like they portrayed Florence Nightingale as this cold, stoic woman that just like was just,
I remember,
like horrible to all the Civil War people. And then Crimean War, sorry. And then you got Mary Seacole, who's this like professing Black magic and doing all this like
Samaritan.
Yeah, the Samaritan.
We did a lesson on Samaritans.
It was a really weird comparison, but
yeah. Whereas all of these other people, they have politicians, they have historians, they have entertainers. You know what I mean? That are not present, that they can be like, oh, look at the history of our country and look at the people and the greatness in which our world is currently in. But when you look at Black people, where is something that they built? Where can we say that these people have been great and they've done something?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's
we're really behind though, isn't it, Britain? It's only now that, you know, like a lot of Black people who've contributed to like building Britain up and done amazing things in history. It's only now we're kind of bringing them to the surface.
Exactly.
Where before you really had to go dig in
to
find these people. They were there, of course they're there.
Of course they were there,
But we just weren't being taught them in school. When we were doing Black History Month, you know, it was very, like our Black, still now it's very
African-American focused.
Do you know what I mean? But now it's kind of changing a little bit now.
Yeah, and that's the importance of this book. So, Jimmy, just because now you can like open up. What I've actually found recently is that the diaspora is kind of opening up itself to just not just being aware of everybody else. So I mean, because we had this discussion, if we want to kind of touch on it again, but like, you know, the whole, how do you feel about this whole new Black British culture experience that you've seen, like going through the research for the book as well as, you know, conversations you've had stateside and then coming over here, like what does that look like for you?
I love it. I mean, just a few nights before I came, I ran into a friend who has lived here, who's Black, and she was just saying, you're going to learn so much from Black British people about Blackness and new perspectives around, you know, your understanding of it, and enjoy it. Like, really take this as an opportunity to do that. And I have been doing that, which has been so great. And, you know, what's so interesting to hear you say about Mary Seacole is that she was one of the people who I didn't know about until we researched this book.
Really?
So it's really fascinating. I was mentioning this on my panel at Foils the other day. I was embarrassed that I didn't know about her, because I consider myself as someone who has always kind of been global in the way that I see things, because I didn't grow up in America my whole life. I moved to Saudi Arabia as an expat. So yeah. I think that I seek out global perspectives more than your average American. And I said, wait, how did I not know about Mary Seacole? Oh, this is by design, right? That even in Black spaces, Americanness is centered more. Mm-hmm. And so this part has been really fascinating for me. And just even the research was harder in the U.S. to find for me about Black British leaders and luminaries. And
it's hard for us, and we're here.
for real. For real.
So I can't imagine how it must have been for you.
My sister's doing a project, and she was like, she wanted to know more about the Black Panthers. So she's kind of opening up her kind of like mind to things. And then she was like, but no, it wasn't even that. She actually asked, why don't we have a Juneteenth? Mm. And I was like, everybody knows what Juneteenth is, right?
That Ralph Ellison book, right?
But you know what Juneteenth is?
No, I don't.
The celebration. So the day the ship came back after the Civil War to free the slaves.
Oh, right, okay.
On June 18th.
Okay.
Is it 18th?
It's, 19th.
So that's the day. And then, so I was like, well, you know, then, because in order to do that in Britain, you actually have to speak about what it was like in Britain and then what they owned in the Caribbean and then, or in Africa and places, and then figure that out. So she was really like, her mind was kind of blown on that. So she was thinking, why don't we have the same kind of, like,
openness. Because we're stiff upper lipped, and our racism is very intrinsic in the world
British
that we're
culture is, oh, let's not make a fuss about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not, you know, it's there, but let's just, you know, sweep it under the rug and hide it in the closet.
Yeah. It's like that film. Have you seen Belle?
Yes.
Belle.
Yeah, it was a beautiful film.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen Belle, no.
Gugu Mbatha.
What's her name?
Oh, it's, I forgot as well.
Oh,
Ama Sante? Was
that?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
And, You've not seen it?
I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. So, a nobleman, an aristocrat, brings home his mixed-race daughter to live in one of the...
I've seen the trailer, I just haven't seen the movie. Oh, okay,
parts that I don't like about that film.
Yeah, there's definite parts. But then it's just like, that's kind of the context in which you have to start.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Explaining to like Black British people about how their context here, you know?
And also, even like a lot of the times I was reading up on, say, for example, even like first waivers, you know, when women got the rights to vote here in 1918, a lot of the times these people who were activists were pretty privileged here.
Mm-hmm.
And so they could go out and march on the streets and do all of these other things. But for a lot of Black people, because the interplay of class and race is so tight here, it's almost impossible for any light to be shed on those lives here. Whereas I think it's a bit different in the States. I don't know if you will agree with me, but I think the dialogue between race and class is, I think, one of the main things that separates or that differentiates the race relations in America and in Britain.
Yeah, it has. It plays itself out differently because of the history. Yeah. And I think there's some similarities. So, for example, you know, and especially in the feminist spaces I'm in, one of my biggest frustrations is when people lionize people like Alice Paul, who would be like one of the people you mentioned from the early suffragist movement, because she did fight for women getting the franchise. But she also said to Ida B. Wells Barnett, you know, really impactful black journalist and anti-lynching activist, oh, well, if you want to march at the suffragist parade, you have to march in the back with your people. You can't march with us up front. Now, Ida B. Wells didn't listen and marched herself right up to the front with everybody else. Mm. But I always think about that as kind of the metaphor for the situation that we're often in. And I think that so we have some similarities there, but I think that the U.S. history of how class has been disrupted in certain ways because of the way that the U.S. was founded is just quite different. You know, I think there was this big fascination that people like myself have had over The Crown and Downton Abbey and all these kinds of cultural things, because I think that in the UK, at least from our perspective, those class lines were so much more clearly drawn and adhered to. They exist in the US, but they're not, there's this other counter narrative that is like, if one pulls up their bootstrap, the rugged individual is a lie. The American dream, like so-called American dream. Yeah. If you fight for it and you work hard and you pull yourself up by the bootstraps, then you'll be able to achieve success, will still intoxicate people into believing that it's somehow possible. And so I think that's a little bit of the difference, that it's more clear here in specific ways, but it's there. I mean, that's one of the reasons why when the current president was running, people would refer to him as the working class billionaire, which is an oxymoron.
Well, didn't he say that he's, you know, his father gave him a little bit of money of £1 million to start off his $1 million to start off his business? I was like, just a little bit of money.
And people support that. I mean, the funny part is I've heard people use that in arguments, like commentators saying, oh, well, he only got a little pick me up. I mean, for the amount his dad could have given him, it really wasn't that much. And so, but I think what's interesting about it is that it exists in the US, but because of our narrative, or because there are exceptional narratives, Americans love exceptionalist stories, then they'll say, well, there isn't really this major class problem here because this person had nothing when they were younger and then built themselves up. But they had whiteness or they had another sort of social factor that was helping them get there along the way. So I think that the thing that's interesting to me about here is just the ways in which these things are...
You don't go against the grain.
Don't go against the grain. They're clearer. Even the ways in which, you know, being in Ubers, you learn so much. And I was staying in this hotel recently and the guy goes, oh, you're in a money place. It was when I first came in. It was in Kensington near the museums.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he was trying to figure out how I was going there and why. Yeah. You know, but it was such an interesting thing that he kind of said that in a way that I wouldn't have expected in the States that someone would
really
comment on that.
I expect the absolute silence from my Uber drivers. I'm like, don't talk to me.
Yeah, no, it was so interesting. He's like, ooh, you're going to a good money place, and like associating the neighborhood like that.
Yeah.
It's
really, that's really interesting.
You do step into those places.
Yeah. Just kind of, I just want to take, like, I'm assuming you've read The Great Gatsby.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, because I just feel like it's the perfect example here, because obviously Gatsby is rich and he's trying to buy himself into Tom Buchanan's class, but he's failing to do so. These people are not allowing him to get there. Is that kind of divide now, you know, kind of gone now? So in America, can you actually buy yourself? Could a Gatsby now buy himself into Tom Buchanan's class?
I think to a certain extent. You know, I think that's the question that you see people kind of grappling with in those echelons right now.
Are you
right?
New money, or are you like old money?
Exactly, like the nouveau riche, the old money blue bloods type thing. You know, I went to a boarding school, and I know the terminology is a little bit different here. So like private, but it's a private school, elite school.
Yeah.
That was all girls that I went to, started by blue stocking feminist in the 1800s. I was one of 12 black people at the school when I was there. That's a whole other podcast for another day. But when I was at that school, I learned a lot about, you know, whose money was respected for when it was earned and when it was inherited, and whose money was considered cheaper. even if they had more, mm-hmm. you know, and the ways in which the really rich girls who had familial names but might not have had money, but they had property or they had a name that a president had or something like that, would have more class status than someone whose dad had struck it rich on some sort of trade and then they had a Rolls Royce pick them up at school or something. And so that was an education for me about class, or even so much as I would have white parents sometimes say to me on Parents Weekend, "We're so glad that our money to the scholarship fund could make it possible for you to go here."
Wow.
But I was a full tuition paying student.
Oh my goodness.
So those assumptions about class were really interesting for me too. When people would come to me and be like, "It's so like literally pat me on the head, so great that we could make it possible for you to get this world class education."
Do you know what the thing is though?
Oh my god.
When it comes to when it comes to that, what you said about the whole nouveau riche and like how your money, what quality of the money and stuff, I feel like that's it's similar here, but when you look at aristocracy and they had the titles that go with it. You see what I mean?
I don't like think
so. So if you were going to a pub, well, they're private, but they're called public schools. Mm-hmm. Public schools such as Harrow or Eton and whatnot. A lot of them are, a lot of the students that go there are from noble, quote unquote noble birth. So they've got like their baron, the baronetcies and the viscounts and all these things. And obviously viscounts are below certain ranks, and obviously they all work in businesses as well. But if I think in this, I feel like in the States, once you strip away the titles and they have the money and, you know, the agency to go further in their companies, I think that's kind of what the slight similarity is, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
So in America, they've got those big businesses like the Hiltons and all those people, but they probably have that here, but they have titles alongside them, fifth viscount of Berkshire or whatever, but then a lot of them have their hands in business. So I just find that really interesting. That's the way that you just kind of take away that element of class.
And then the business becomes a person, right? They call it like corporate personhood in the States, right? So then the business that you're related to kind of gets the status. I mean, when you hear our politicians talking about businesses and needing to deregulate them, a lot of times they'll talk about them in ways that they would talk about a human, so that you would then empathize with their needs. Which is so insidious and scary. And I've really been, you know, it's kind of like how you need to closely read a book. I try to do that when I hear them talking about it, to be like, oh no, this is trying to make me, you know, care about
this business
like it's a human, profit like a child making, or something like that.
Yeah, that's how they'll treat it.
Exactly.
Did you grow up in New York?
No, I didn't.
I mean, where did you grow up?
So I am originally from the Carolinas. So south in North Carolina. I moved to Saudi Arabia for about 10 years. So I did most of my childhood there. Oh, I mean, it was mostly all that I knew. So
do you speak Arabic?
I don't speak it well. I have like very mediocre Arabic. I speak Arabic like a fourth grader.
Yeah. It's more than me.
But I really, you know, I loved it there because my friends were there and the other kids that grew up in an international school environment. So I think that experience is what I hold on to. And also just being able to travel the world in a way I wouldn't have been able to if I had lived in the States. And then when I was 14, I moved back to the States to the boarding school, and my parents were still living in Saudi Arabia. So then I would go back and forth and spend all my holidays in Saudi Arabia, but I lived in Maryland at this school. And then in college, I stayed in the States, and I've been in the States since then, living in Washington, D.C., New York, Berkeley, California, and Oakland, California, and then back to New York. And so I just kind of see myself as a nomad. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Wow. Okay, before we move on, I just want to ask all of you guys a question. Who were your heroes growing up, like your role models?
Oh, God.
Like, as in actual growing up, not like teens.
You can't just bring this on us out of nowhere.
Why not? Like, it's not out of nowhere. It's, you know, in relation to
so you're talking between the ages of what, 10 and 15?
No, from like 7 to 12.
Okay, I have two. Good. I can just throw them out quickly.
Okay.
Go for it.
Weird enough, it was Mace.
The hip hop preacher.
Yes, it was Puff Daddy and Mace.
As in from 7 till 12.
Yeah.
I love.
Yeah. Okay. It's so weird. I don't know why.
Mace, you know. Guess who's back?
But yeah, Puff Daddy and Mace. It was Eddie Murphy. Absolutely obsessed with Coming to America. I had on cassette. I used to literally rewind it all day long and just watch it.
I'm still obsessed with it.
Right. So, Zumunda. I think I know the whole thing word. And Will Smith.
Okay.
Love Will Smith.
Yeah.
Still do, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, mine was Will Smith, because he's the kind of like, he's kind of what spurred me on to want to do Spanish and acting. So yeah, I was thinking, yeah, him. Also, Trevor McDonald, for some weird reason.
Did you used to watch him?
Yeah, he's on, he's on the news. He's a news anchor here. He's really old, like, he's really old now. But yeah, the news at 10, Trevor McDonald, that always used to be interesting because he was like West Indian and he was just this black man that I saw every night. And he was just, yeah, that was fun. Okay. Those are the two I can think of. I can't think of anybody else. What about you?
Lisa Bonet from The Cosby Show and A Different World. So just because, you know, she was very eccentric, which I've always been. She flies her freak flag high, and but was also smart. And Oprah.
Oh, Oprah.
Mm. I mean, Oprah is goals. I just, everything about her, I love. I'm Southern. You know, she's Southern, resilient, heartfelt, and authentic. And I love that about her.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay, so I had to Google it because I forgot which one it was. Actually,
you even asked the question.
I know. That's why I went last. Okay, so the first time I came to England, I used to be really obsessed with Power Rangers because it was, I just loved it on Fox TV or whatever it's called.
Fox Kids.
Fox Kids, that's it. And I used to love Power Rangers. Like, my name used to be called Power Ranger. Like, they'd call me Power Ranger in the house. And there was Power Rangers Mighty Morphin. The Yellow Ranger changed, and they changed her into this black girl. And it was the first time.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, Aisha Campbell. And I was like, when?
Power Rangers Zeo, wasn't it? The second iteration.
Yes, the Chinese one.
Yeah, but we're going to get into technicalities.
Okay.
Yes.
Anyways, so Aisha Campbell, the Yellow Ranger, was my first ever like person who I saw. And I was like, oh my God, like, she's a black girl and she's me and she's in Power Rangers. Absolutely obsessed. I had everything. And the next person was really simple, Hermione Granger. I loved Harry Potter as a kid. And shut up, Derek.
Hermione is supposed to be black, right? There's a whole controversy.
I mean,
about
she isn't. not when she wrote her. Like, come on, J.K. Rowling.
She went from writing the book to publication.
She is not.
All the way through to film.
She is not black. And it's okay.
At every stage you could have said, right, it's a black girl.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't know. She was black not black.
No.
No.
I swear I thought she was black.
No, but did you? No. Really? No, she's not even described as black.
She's described as curly hair and buck teeth. That could be.
I mean, yeah, no, really, she worked twice as hard because she was a half blood.
Yeah, that's it. Mud blood.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Oh, mud blood. She's muggle born.
She's muggle born. Politically correct. Anyways, yeah, she's a muggle. That's what muggle born, you know. So basically, yeah, so those two, as in, I loved Hermione Granger. She taught me my work ethic as a kid, to be honest. Aisha Campbell from Power Rangers Mighty Morphin, even though Power Rangers Lost Galaxy is the best Power Ranger ever.
When we even had Trisha on TV. Oh, I don't even know what happened.
Also, Tia and Tamira, sister.
Yeah.
That was like my favorite show. Like, I loved that show.
That was a good show.
That was a good show. And Tyena.
It was a good show.
I remember when Keegan and Kel were in Sister. One episode.
Yeah.
Were they?
Yeah.
I don't think they were called
Keenan. Oh, no, they weren't. Yeah, they were separate. Yeah.
They were called.
All these crossovers were great. Nickelodeon was amazing.
You don't remember when Keenan and Kel were in Sister?
No.
Yeah, it was in one episode.
Oh, my God. Okay. Anyways, let's move on.
Alrighty. So, but this week for Mostly Flicks, though, we did have a moment with Hidden Figures.
Yes. Okay. So we watched Hidden Figures this week, and I hope all of you have watched it.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it a couple of times.
Yeah. I love it. Just like your thoughts, guys. Give us your thoughts.
Great movie. I think it's amazing. It's a really, really great feel good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know?
But
what
at
mean?
The same time, I always think feel good shouldn't get like awards, but I think obviously this one was
my only main criticism for not the movie, but I didn't like the white savior thing. It was so
Kevin
annoying.
Costner.
Yeah, I didn't like him.
What do you think, Jamie?
That was my main critique of the film, especially just having read some of the real history of how that happened, feeling like, oh, it's tied up too nicely in a bow, that level of benevolence usually doesn't happen. And, you know, I understand why they wanted this for their story arc, but I would have just loved the movie with these women just kicking butt the way that they did themselves. But yeah, I loved it. I mean, we have a hidden figure in the book. I wish we could have had all three.
Yeah.
52. And, you know, I think I enjoyed the movie mostly just because the response that I saw from, like, Black children in the movie theaters was really inspiring to me. And also just Janelle Monáe.
Right.
Is amazing.
Loved.
I love her Janelle. So much.
I love them all, but Janelle Monáe was like the one character I was just in awe of. I think they should have been more of her as well, but obviously.
And how she wanted to just better herself. Yeah. And they all did, but she really wanted to excel. And she, and when she went to the courtroom and she was like, listen, like, stop moving the damn finishing line.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm really trying here.
She played on his ego. In that,
I mean, you always have to do with people.
Yeah, she was like, you can be the person to make the change. Like, you know what I mean? You've been at the forefront of all this change all this time. So it was good though. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really
enjoyed
it. It was the first time that I actually rated, what's her name?
Who?
God, the main character.
Taraji.
All I think is Cookie.
You rated you know what?
I know, I'm not really.
Have you seen Baby Boy?
I have.
You rate her in Baby Boy?
I didn't, but you know why? I loved Baby Boy. The only reason why, because she's never made me like, she's never made my heart like move. But it's only when she was running and that time when she ran to the toilet. Yeah.
When she was in Benjamin.
When she was running and then she's finally had enough and she's the guy's like, where the hell are you? At that moment when what she said, like I was in the cinema like,
I saw that. I was like, yes, man, talk up.
Like my heart was just tugging.
She was good in Benjamin Button
as well.
And
then I cried.
I enjoyed her in Benjamin Button.
Oh, she was in Benjamin
Button. Yeah, she was.
You know, that was the last film she auditioned for.
Really?
That was the last film she auditioned for.
So remember, she didn't have to audition no more?
When you get to a certain stage, you don't have to start auditioning. Yeah. They come and start asking you.
Oh, is it? I thought even when they ask you, you still have to do like a little...
I don't know,
if they do like a star-studded, like...
It's more of a like a conversation. It's like, this is a role that's right for you kind of thing.
And I really love Cookie.
Yeah.
I just have to say. I'm going to admit it. I stopped watching Cookie
after the first season.
Yeah, I mean, I love Cookie in that season. Yes. It just became a bit...
I stopped watching it. I can't watch it anymore either.
The show became a bit much. I was like, why is he still alive? Anyway, because he's supposed to be dying. I don't know.
I would watch her with the sound off even. Just like everything about her person.
My favorite scene was when she... Okay, I'm not here for violence, but when she slapped up, is it Lucius's?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
His girlfriend.
His girl.
Yes. She does
the drink part. I think I used it as a meme one time describing Derek. But that was amazing.
Yeah.
It was just pop. Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah.
I wish I could do that.
You know, in Hidden Figures then? Mm. So that was kind of like, the one thing about, what's her name? Octavia Spencer.
Mm.
She's always in these films that are heavy civil rights films. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like she's being given a chance to be in a film that's just not
just
that,
about
she was in
blackness.
The Help. She's in The Help, then you got The Hidden Figures, and then she's going to be doing this other.
No, she was in a film recently. Oscar.
The Shape of Water.
She was in that. But she was also like the supporting actress.
It was a subsidiary role.
Yeah, it's always a supportive sort of good Mary Seacole part.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here to help you
become
the star-studded person that you're meant to be. Yeah, I think that's also true.
It's always there's always an attitude within her character. Like even in this Hidden Figures when she went to the library and she had to...
It's very money.
And she stole the book. And like she did that anyway kind of thing, and it was just like, this is the kind of stuff that she's always, it's like her story is always confronted with that, like
but she was quite subdued in Hidden Figures though.
Yeah,
she wasn't
as fiery as in The Help.
She wasn't fiery,
she the
but
one
she
who
was
says, eat my shit in there.
That was definitely
that was an amazing part.
That was a great scene.
She was very mellow here, very motherly, very calm, very calculating in the way that she wanted to sort of fight her oppression with like Kirsten Dunst's character.
I didn't even realize that was Kirsten Dunst. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, you look familiar.
I hate
what's
Kirsten
going on.
Dunst.
But she's great. Like, I feel like she's aging.
I can't stand her.
I thought that was the one from Save the Last Dance. Is that not her?
No,
Julia Stiles. Julia Stiles.
No, that's what? Kirsten Dunst.
I thought Julia.
That's Mary. No, Kirsten Dunst. The first thing I know about
Jumanji.
Her is Mary. Really, I think Mary Jane.
Mary Jane.
She did an interview with her
vampire. It was Interview with a Vampire.
Not Mary.
Oh, it's
not Mary.
Interview with a Vampire.
That was her debut. That was Dunst's
Spider-Man.
debut.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, when she was like 11 years old or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So she was in Jumanji first.
Oh, maybe she was.
She was in Jumanji?
Yeah, she was the girl.
I thought the love interest? With
the girl.
The little one.
No, yeah. wasn't her first movie, Kirsten Honey, Dunst. I Shrunk the Kids or something? Wasn't she in that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Why are we centering this white woman?
Anyway, so internalized repression, right?
Stockholm
syndrome. It's not about you, Kirsten Dunst. It's about Octavia Spencer. You know, I mean,
she looks older. And like, funny.
Yeah, so thank you, guys.
Cool.
Mostly flicks. So race issue. Now, as you guys know, everyone has been like releasing a gender pay gap within like the last couple of weeks from absolutely all sorts of industries. They've been sort of legally, they've had to actually say their results. And I was looking at the publishing industry's gender pay gap, and I've come for these publishers, and it's time for y'all to just get your shit together. Okay. So I was reading an article, and Penguin Random House, Hatchet UK, and HarperCollins, please, like, I've come to drag you because this is absolutely disrespectful from an industry that has 2/3 of the population being women. How is your mean average paying men more? Please fix up your shit. None of us are here for it. It's just absolutely crazy. And my only issue is, okay, gender pay gap, terrible. We're not even looking at like the differences in ethnicities and people of color within these gender pay gap sort of things. So when those results come out, I don't even know what I'll say. So I just, that's my issue. I'm here to just be like, the results are out. Please sort it out.
Mic was dropped.
Wait, so does it say which one pays more out of the three?
No, so it's not that. So basically, I was just reading it. I don't know if these have changed, but biggest disparity was with Hatchet UK. I don't really take the median because that's just the middle, but the mean was 29.69%. And then you have Penguin Random House. God, I don't know which ones were they. Let me see. Did I just say Hatchet?
I don't think he's
one. Anyways, but Hatchet was the worst one out of the three, out of HarperCollins and Penguin Random House.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, guys, please, like, if you're about social change, actually be about it and start paying people what they are owed for their hard work.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hey. All right, so that's the end of the show. Thank you so much, Jamia, for coming
and
carving out some of your time to come and talk to us and hear us. You know,
It was lovely.
Yeah, it was amazing. What's up for you next? Like, where can people find you? Like, what's going on? And
so I am so excited. I'm still going to be here for a little bit and doing some bookstore visits.
Nice.
And also just exploring around. People can find me on Instagram, Jamia Wilson, and also on Twitter at Jamia W. And I'm happy to stay connected. I know that I'll be listening to this podcast regularly. And also, for anyone who's going to be doing PIN World Voices next week, I will be doing an activist story hour. It's the first children's storytelling resistance story hour, and it's going to be with the author of A is for Activist and also the author of the translation of The Chinese Emperor's New Clothes. So I'm really excited about that, and we're going to have the littles there with us doing a resistance storytelling experience, and I can't wait.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys next week.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.